be part of the conversation, send us a WhatsApp message on +27 73 470 3520 or call us at +27 12 001 7679. Let your voice be heard. Adventist World Radio, powered by SID Media, from broadcast to baptism.
Well, good evening to you, and welcome to the Thursday edition of Business Sense right here on Adventist World Radio. We are powered by SID Media. It is a Wednesday, the 7th of November 2024, and welcome to our Shapeshifter conversation. And every single Thursday, we do this thing called Shapeshifters, where we bring you some of the leading minds on the African continent as they tell us a little bit about who they are, where they were born, you know, how did they get to be where they are, some of the things that they've achieved, particularly so that young people can also learn from them. If God did it for them, that's what we believe in. Hence why this particular segment is really, really important. If God did it for them, I'm sure that God can do it for you as well. So that's why we bring our guests to talk to us on this Thursday, and today is no different. And my shapeshifter today, it is Mr. Henry Hakulandaba, a distinguished PR and communication specialist currently serving as the CEO and a lead creative director at 11 Docs Inc. with a rich background as a multi-award-winning African photographer and, more importantly, storyteller. His career spans photography, script writing, and the production of animal video and photo-based content. So you might just want to call her the king of content and creativity. And he is joining us this evening to talk to us a little bit about his career. Good evening, sir, and welcome to Business Sense.
Evening, Kavile. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much for joining us this evening. And how are you?
No, I'm well. A bit hot, and I think we are ready for the rainy season.
Oh, rainy! Oh, this time it's the rainy season in Zimbabwe, right?
Yes, we're now getting into the rainy season. So sometimes during the days are a bit hot, and then all of a sudden it can change to be a rainstorm, and
Oh, wow. And what type of, fruits or vegetables or crops you normally work during this time in terms of, I suppose, in Zim? Is this a planting season or harvesting season when it's raining?
So it's mainly the planting season. So you're looking at your main crops, which is your, I think the one that says our staple food, the pap. That's the maize. With potatoes, actually most people actually have it in now. We have sweet potatoes now. People are pretty much now planting. I mean, the variety of crops that happen, you know, during this time of the year. I think, you know, and also then your wild fruits everywhere. So yeah, it's a very nice time for the first fruit season. So we know this coming summer, but someone will be coming with a bucket of different wild fruit to give to the church.
And you'll be enjoying those wild fruits, eh?
Well, definitely.
That's really lovely. Well, thank you so much for joining us. Really, really appreciate your time. And we are really quite cognizant of how busy it can be, but we really appreciate your time. Are you suffering, like some of us are, of NDF fatigue? I mean, a lot of people that I talk to would say, yo, around November, it's that time when things start getting more difficult. Waking up every day is a difficult thing. Or is that not for CEOs?
You don't have that luxury. You know, people want to be paid every month. So you don't have that luxury.
I
mean, most people misunderstand. They think when you're a CEO, People bring you tea.
Yeah.
You're calling meetings anytime.
You don't have.
There's no time to relax. That's why you see CEOs just speak off their phones and disappear for a week or two.
Yes.
Just to, you know, re-energize.
Yes.
And, you know.
Sure.
Yeah. So it's a bit.
It's a bit very busy. And do you take some time out to say end of the year, or are you those people who do it rather at the beginning of each year? Because like you said, people must be paid. There's really lots of, I suppose, targets that you still need to close for the end of the year. So it gets a little bit busier still for you in December, and you only get some time maybe next year, early next year.
It's a mixture. I'm a married man. Always take control of the times we have to relax.
Yes.
So, you know, if they set up the time that we have to be free during this time, I follow. I'm a listening husband.
Yeah.
So I make sure I follow what
you say. Yes. Okay. So,
yeah, but it's very much important to relax as an individual. Although, in our space, that's the time also where it's very much busy.
Yes.
Because you now have to plan for January.
Mm.
So it is, I mean, we are in a business where in comms, PR, advertising, marketing, you have to be at least a month ahead of everyone.
Yes.
So you can only relax for 4 or 5 days. Then, you know, by the 30 something, 30th of December,
you're already thinking,
grinding and making sure by the 2nd, 3rd, you know, of January, things are moving smoothly.
Yeah, sure. So it's not really nice being a CEO. It's a nice title, but yeah, you work very, very hard, right? So that's quite interesting.
Yeah.
Okay. You are the CEO, lead creative director, and that's just one of the many things that you do. But I want to come a little bit back, take a step back with you before we get into the nitty-gritties of that role and what you do there. Can you tell us a little bit about yourself? Where were you born, and how was it like, at least from your memory?
So I was born in a small town called Tegutu.
Okay.
It's a small farming town.
Yeah.
We pretty much grew up there on a farm.
Mm.
Our grandfather had a farm there.
Mm.
So that's where we pretty much grew up from.
Mm.
And our parents then moved on into the town as well. So we grew up in that town.
Yeah.
But my father was an immigration officer.
Yeah.
But then we're moving in border town.
Yeah.
So I also grew up in Bainbridge. I grew up in Big Falls.
Yeah.
So they are small towns. So these are towns that I literally grew up in, and you know, you get to meet different people, you get to meet different cultures.
Yeah.
But all for the good day.
Mm.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
I'm a small town guy.
that's beautiful. And what do you remember are some of the challenges, particularly socioeconomic challenges, that you remember coming from a small town, right? I'm thinking in my mind, which is some of the things that you find across many villages or even small towns in the different African countries, is things like challenges of unemployment, poverty, you know, sicknesses and all those. What were some of the challenges, socioeconomic challenges that you can remember in your small town?
I think dreaming big is the biggest challenge that you face when you're in a small town.
Okay.
Where your dream can only be limited to the number of people you have access to. But I mean, when you're in a small town like Bainbridge, which is like a transit town, because I think at that time I was very young, but one thing I really noticed was the need of, I think the most of the challenges that we face, I cannot say I faced any challenges because I was just a dependent.
Yeah.
I think we need to be heard. I think that has been, which is the biggest challenge of people in small towns.
Yeah.
The problems that they face are not usually the problems that are seen by authorities who act out.
Yeah.
So I think that's the main challenge that people face when they're in small towns. And they end up living a very much base life. But with these big dreams in their heads. So, I think those are the challenges that they face.
Yeah.
I mean, when you're in a small town, you face.
Yeah.
I mean, for me, I cannot relate, I'll be honest.
Yeah.
Because it was a very young age.
It was a very young age.
Where you just flow with what the parents have, and it's usually good enough.
Yeah.
As long as there's the TV, you watch wrestling.
Yeah.
You're fine.
Yeah, you're fine.
You always is done. So, I mean, you had no problem. If your friend has a TV, you just go watch TV.
Yeah, go and watch TV. You're fine. That's an interesting one, right? And like you said, you were not really exposed to these things, right? So would you say your parents played a bigger role in cushioning you a lot of the time?
Yes. So my father, regardless of him being an immigration officer, he was running businesses especially Panabiting cars.
Okay.
So the team of his guys, actually half of the yard was a Panabiting shop, and the other side was where we would play.
Yeah.
So there's that quick thing that happened, because financially he was okay. So there was a lot. There was a lot of questioning. I think in that front.
And would you say that then the questioning, and it sounds also like, because your father also had other businesses and was working, so there was also cushioning financially as well to an extent, right? Even though maybe there could have been want for more, whatever the case, but God was gracious enough and you were cushioned from that end. How has that influenced the person that you then eventually became? And I'm asking that right now, when you look back right now, would you say that cushion has played a role in who you are today, as a father, as a husband, as a leader, as an elder, all those sort of stuff?
All right. So I'll give you this context.
Yeah.
When you see your parent fail several times when you're young, and also the parent is open enough to show you his failures, even when you're young, when you are 10, 12 years old, it hardens you and prepares you for any eventuality.
Yeah.
So whenever a father would make losses, the guy would literally say, these days.
Yeah.
I've lost money.
Yeah.
So you start understanding that life is not about winning all the time.
Yes.
You won't get the chance to win all the time. And I used to ask myself, but why does he have this business?
Yeah.
And this business?
Yeah.
And also working at the same time?
Yes.
And it taught me to say, I think in life you just need multiple streams of income. There's always a reason. So when you're a leader, there is this world that you come into where the burden now lies on you to solve problems. Wisdom that you need to share, to also financially. So we used to have a lot of people that used to come into our house, and I vividly remember up until the time I left, I stopped staying with my parents. They used to have people that they served from church, from the streets. So that period of my father's life, my parents' life, really gave me a bigger perspective of how the world works.
Yes.
That you are privileged to have this, but also when you're given this, you cannot have it forever.
Yes.
You also need to share.
You also need to share.
So it really created a world where I have to be empathetic about
yes.
other people's plight.
Okay.
Understanding that not everyone is gifted the same.
Yes.
If you get the opportunity that you get, that's a blessing. But if you don't, you don't. And you have to be grateful for what you have already. Yeah.
Okay, lovely. And where did you go for your formative schooling years? So your younger years, 7, 8 years, say perhaps before you did your O level and stuff. Where did you go, and how was the elementary schooling system like for you?
So I was at Baobab Primary School,
yeah.
And then I went to. So I went to Baby Primary, and then I went to Baobab Primary School. When my father retired, we went to Chegut, back to Chegut.
Yeah.
The where I was born, where I went to David Whitehead.
Yeah.
Primary school.
Yeah.
So I went to Baby Primary School my primary year. Quite good schools up until today. They're still quite good schools. Then from there I went to Ngezi High School, which was a boarding school. That was a different life.
Yeah,
where you start learning how to budget. I think
yes.
that's the main thing that you in
boarding
school.
Okay.
Yeah. And then I went to my A level.
Yeah.
Which is the final years before university,
yes.
or the 2 years with this high school.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, those are some of the schools that pretty much made who I am today.
Yes.
Quite interesting. It's quite interesting journey. Now I have to think about it.
Yeah. that's lovely. Now, different schools, even at a younger age, you went to, I think you said, about 3 different schools. What was it like moving from one school to the other? Was it not tiring? Did you not find it a little bit exhausting? I know you're still a child, but I'm sure having to make new friends all over again and all that, to some, you know, children might find that that's a little bit too much. Did you find it easy navigating that and having new friends and constantly, when you're just gelling with your best friend, you now have to move schools again?
Yeah, I mean, it's always challenging. But I think the advantage that I had in my siblings is having parents who would speak about,
okay,
this is our work, we can move from this area to this area to this area. So whenever you knew that we're moving to another town, it was like an adventure. So you'd be like, I'm looking forward to go and stay in Big Falls. I'll see the Big Stoya Falls. I'll see the Big Christ.
Yeah.
I remember I used to think when we were moving to Big Falls.
Yeah.
I thought I'll give myself a pet lion.
Yeah.
You know,
look at that.
So that's it. And that was it.
Sure.
But in terms of making friends, I think the advantage I had I siblings, who are not far off me in terms of age.
In terms of age, yeah.
And also the community. I think this community is pretty much helps.
Yes.
Because the moment you get to a certain area, they take quickly congregate. There's midweek at your house. Already you get 4 or 5 people that want to be friends with you.
Yeah.
Which is the same value system, and so I think for us it was much easier.
It was much easier
to integrate into societies.
Yeah,
because you're coming from a different region. You learn Venda.
Yeah,
you as one of your primary languages.
Yeah,
from Bedridge you go to Vic Falls. There's Tonga. There's Bemba. You learn that. You integrate, you learn, and you know, you move there, you go to another, you learn. So it's pretty much For me, it was pretty much adventure.
Yeah.
And so integration was not something that I struggled with.
Yes, yes.
You know, plus also, you know, sometimes you find coping mechanisms.
Mm.
For me, it was that adventure, sport. I was very good at sport.
Mm.
So you quickly also have a following and say, this is what I'm contributing to the community or society.
Mm.
So, yeah.
Lovely. Okay, that's really lovely. And so you were obviously then, like you said, getting to your higher levels in education. Did you always know that you wanted to be a PR and communication specialist? So in other words, when you were now deciding your subjects or the course that you're going to get at university, did you always know? Was it something that you were groomed into in your O-level and stuff like that as you were preparing for university, or you found this when you got to university?
No, not even then. The funny story is, I actually never went to school to study PR and communication.
Oh.
I studied environmental health. I then specialized in epidemiology. I then did another one in disaster management.
Yeah.
Project management.
Yeah.
So the background is, we had a camera at home.
Yeah.
Because of this traveling, my father liked to document these things.
Yes.
So we had cameras at home. So one or the other, you get exposed to taking pictures.
Yes.
And it became like a default setting. So when I was at university now, studying, I knew that I liked photography. I liked media.
Okay.
I liked this filming thing. And then I was in the media team pretty much throughout my university career.
Yeah.
I think most people who were with me during the university, I'm not even shocked that I switched.
Yeah.
I switched careers.
Sure.
So, then you brought the new Andy from Media Center.
Mm.
So when you went to Solution University, we are the ones who set up the PhD. So we filmed the sermons. We pretty much did everything that media people could do.
Mm.
So it was the transition to that wasn't that much.
Mm.
And when I was even working, most of my reports were visually heavy.
Mm.
I'll then do a documentary, I'll then do pictorial with captioning, titles, everything.
Mm.
And then they'll ask, did you hire a consultant who would compile all these things? No, I'm the one who did it myself.
Mm. Mm.
So that's when I really got the great exposure to see, to start saying, I can make a career out of this.
Mm.
And then, you know, and then one incident led to the other. And then I moved full time into photography.
Yeah.
And then you start learning other things. And then you start learning other things and become, you pivot to go to PR, you pivot to become, go into communication, marketing, advertising.
Yes. Yeah.
And then a few years later, you're full on in the industry.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Let's talk about that switch, because I know you've been running 11 Docs for a little over 6 years or thereabouts, right? And I think that's when you made that switch that you're referring to as well. So a lot of people would find it hard to switch, right, because of the technicalities. Like you said, you were in environmental science, right? And when one looks at photography, completely different things. Yes, you might have grown in a family where, I suppose, dad liked to take pictures and maybe you were fascinated by that as well. And so it almost became like a natural progression of some sort. But I'm pretty sure that you loved environmental science. So that switch, what light bulb went on, or what moment made you switch?
Okay, so there was a cholera outbreak in 2008, 2008.
Yeah.
2008. And there was a pretty major blackout of what was happening in the hospital. That time I was looking at the infectious disease hospital. I took lots of pictures for my reporting project.
Okay.
And met a reporter, a journalist from BBC.
Yeah.
The guy then said, no, I heard you take pictures.
Yes.
Is it possible? Because you cannot get into the infectious hospital because of obviously the health protocol and everything. Can I please have 5 images? And I was like, no, that's fine. I gave him pictures. After that very night, all those pictures were all over the internet.
Oh, my.
They were on TV.
Oh, my.
And I was shocked. I was like, but to me, it was, you know, you're worried with the publicity because you've forgotten the rules of where you work.
Yes.
And also this publicity that has come and small fame that has come.
Yeah.
You know, I was like, okay, let's see how it goes. So 2 or 3 months passed. This guy then calls me. I'd like to meet up with you. I've got a gift for you. Okay, what gift? And then they gave me $5,000.
Sure.
No, I managed to sell your images across different agencies. And this is, I just rounded it off. It's 4,000 something, but to say thank you,
yes.
It's $5,000.
Yeah.
That's when I realized, like, okay, so I can make much
There's
more money.
There's money here, yes.
Yeah, so that was the light bulb moment. And over the years, when it started being weddings and, you know, you start appreciating some of the small big chunks that come every weekend. And you start saying, you know, I can be free during the week and work one day in the week on the weekend and, you know, I get paid greater than my monthly salary.
Yeah, yeah.
So, yeah, I literally then said, you know what?
Yeah, I know.
Let me switch.
I'm leaving this sales,
thing. I'm well qualified to go back to work.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. That's an interesting plot twist right there. I wouldn't have thought that it was pictures that you took randomly somewhere and then all of a sudden they're all over the internet, the news agencies there. I'm sure that moment was like a nerve-wracking moment, like you're saying, because like, the publicity, my employer, and quite a bit to think about and chew. But I mean, that normally happens in those type of ways, you know, where you have that really a light bulb moment where you're like, sure, maybe this is what I need to pivot into there. And so far then, what would you say, now that you've pivoted into this type of industry, what are some of the challenges, at least one or two that you can think of that you've faced so far? And how did you solve those problems or navigate or work around them?
Can you repeat the challenges?
Yeah, so far of running this, you've pivoted into a different industry. It's been 6 years of running, 11 docs. So that light bulb moment almost changed, I suppose, your trajectory in terms of your career as well, and you got into this space. So what is the one or two challenges that come to mind so far that you've faced, and how have you dealt with them?
I think the main challenge is always money.
Money.
I think what we call economics of the stomach.
Yeah, yeah.
So the idea is most of us think by charging less, we get more clients.
Yes.
So I got into that space. And then you start realizing you're actually doing a disservice to yourself. You don't charge the industry standard. Because you think by getting more clients, by charging lower than the industry standard, you get more clients. Sure, you get more clients, but most clients in our industry tend to want value for service.
Yes.
So if you charge less, they'll not hire you.
Yeah.
Pretty much that's how it usually works in this industry.
Yeah.
So I suffered from that early on. And then the moment I then sat down with a couple of mentors, that's when I realized, I was charging too less because I thought of the clients. And then the clients would see my figures and then say, no, we cannot work with someone who is like this. He might not even bring out the products we want. Or he cannot give us the service that, you know, he's not confident.
Yeah.
So, I mean, the thing with PR and communication is all about perception. You know, it shapes the reality of your day-to-day living. So I think that was one of the major mistakes I made earlier on. And also thinking that by doing one thing by yourself, you can literally do it all. But then when you then find out the name 11 Dogs, where it comes from, it comes from 11 Dogs Can Kill a Lion. The idea of collaboration is more pivotal than one man band. So that's how I came up with the name 11 Dogs. And then my business partner then was like, oh, you know, this is a good idea. Let's just use that name. And then we registered that name, and it's really sticking people's mind there. So, I think the money aspect and the individual solopreneurship, really, if I do what I know now, I would have done lots of collaborations.
It
would have helped a lot,
Love it. And what would you then say? I mean, we don't want to just focus on the challenges and everything, but what would you say is the one high point so far in the career, especially since you've pivoted to it? And I'll keep repeating that because I think that's really an important point there. Since you've pivoted, what is the high point so far? You've already spoken about one where your pictures, you know, went viral into the internet and all that. But what is the one other high point that you can think about?
I get so many.
Sure.
I think when I was awarded the African Photographer of the Year, that was one high point. In that same year, I also got Environmental Photographer of the Year as well. Other high points are pretty much, I mean, they've been coming. I literally worked with almost every president and government in the SADC region. Those are some of the high points which has now become day-to-day living because you're constantly meeting the people that literally influence the decisions of, let's say, 300 million people in the southern region. And you realize the importance of the work that you're doing that. If I advise these guys the wrong way, it literally affects lots of people. So it's a high point that you have to continuously harness and you know, and look back and say, okay. This is where I've been. And this is where I might go.
We're running out of time, but I want to get into then the aspects about money, and we are a money and business show. So those are really quite interesting for us, particularly also for young people around money management and personal finances and all those sort of stuff. So I want to ask then the question that says, how do you characterize your relationship with money? And maybe, you know, as you answer that as well, tell us a little bit about the one challenge about money or around money that you have faced and how you've also dealt with that money problem.
Money. So, I mean, the definition is very simple and straightforward. But I think the reputation of money is pretty much reputation and influence.
Okay.
That is putting on a sheet of paper.
Yes.
I mean, it helps with trust. When someone that pays you, they trusted you to do something.
Mm.
So, money pretty much enables certain possibilities for your individual self, but also a continued relationship with the people that you work with or the people that you gift that money. I mean, it does lots of things, but I don't think people should take money as just store of wealth, because I think they will miss the point. I think it's something that unlocks certain things that are intangible. So, when you understand human behavior, it's a reward system. So the mind is literally not in a back and forth of reward and, you know. So I always see money as the something that unlocks certain possibilities. And you said the other question was to what?
So if you can, so you're saying money unlocks possibilities, right? But would you say you've got a healthy relationship with it, or maybe it's a work in progress? So that's the one bit. The second was, if there's any challenge or lesson you've learned on the use of money.
So one lesson I've learned is, find someone who can manage your money. I think I'm bad with it. But the people who out there who are very good at managing things. But the way I process money is not, I have to store it.
Yeah.
For me, it has to be used.
Yeah.
So if I have 100 rand or 100 US, I'm thinking, what can I use it to figure out what I want to do? And sometimes the resulting effect could take longer. I usually don't want to process that. So that's why I usually get people to manage that money for me.
Okay.
It literally helps me to achieve and to keep myself in check. It helps a lot. The challenge is, we think we know too much about money. We actually don't. We overspend these things. Mostly this Christmas, people will be eating all their salaries, and come January, there's no school fees.
There's no school fees, yeah.
So you literally need someone who can manage it for you. But if you're good at it, that's a blessing.
Okay, all right.
Yeah.
Let's conclude then with these ones. So if you to glance back at your younger self, right? The young Henry, for example, and you are given an opportunity to give him advice, what advice would you give to him?
I think the biggest advice I'll give to my younger self is, I should have done more. I should have risked more. I should have jumped higher. Probably to study the irrational than the rational. I think the biggest opportunities in life when you're younger, I can understand why people behave irrationally and not assuming they behave logically. I think studying more to do with how to live your day-to-day life and just be grateful. I think it sums up the things that I'm thinking.
Yeah.
I should have done this.
Yeah.
I should have reacted this way. So, I mean, it's quite an interesting thought thinking that way. But,
I'm with you.
I think to the younger guys, I mean, if you don't ask, if you don't ask questions, you'll never get the answers.
You'll never get the answers. Sure. Okay. And is there anything you would do differently? Is there anything you would change? Is there anything you would, if given the opportunity, take a slight detour on? So if given that opportunity as a younger person, would you change anything?
Thinking of it, I probably think I would have married much earlier. Because you know the. I think I would have married. I should have married much earlier.
Much earlier.
Because what it does is, the relationship that you start having later on with your spouse, it is much more fluid, and you know that what do you call it? Unison of thought in the wanting to achieve certain things. So would have achieved lots of things much earlier. And would have
Sure. Okay.
You're really pushing me back to think about this. But it's quite interesting.
It is,
because you doubt a lot in terms of your journey in career and in relationships.
Yeah.
And then now that I think that I would have probably got married much earlier. Solved more things and news and much earlier.
Yeah.
You would have achieved things much earlier. But I mean God works in the spirit.
Yes, that's
really true. It is what it is.
Yeah, that's really true. Okay, you are the CEO, lead creator, multi-award-winning photographer, storyteller. You've done script writing, production. The next 10 years, is there anything still that's outstanding? Where do you see yourself?
I think the next 10 years or after 10 years.
The next 10 years.
Okay, so I am right now. I've been looking into doing behavioral psychology.
Okay.
I don't think I'll do it as a PhD. I think it would be to take me 10 years.
Okay.
So I'll probably do it as a master's. You have to learn how the mind thinks. The mind is just a fascinating tool. And then I think that's a thrust, probably do law.
Okay.
For that, you know, sometimes we need to encourage our kids to, to also excel academically when they see their parents.
Yes, that's
true. Excelling academically.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I think I'll do both for the younger generation so that they, you know, my kids will not be inspired by my next door neighbor. They say, I know his next door is a doctor when I have a chance. So I think that's the thrust now.
Yeah.
And then after probably be living on a farm somewhere.
And farm somewhere.
Natural food and
Lovely. That would be going back to your farming younger self, you know, as a farmer.
No, farming is great.
Yeah, it is, but it's certainly very, very great there. 10 seconds. Young people are listening, and some might be following you, some might be watching you from afar. What would be your word of advice to them as we close on this one?
I think the greatest lesson is always see what other people are doing, observe, learn, follow the good footsteps. I mean, sometimes when you're young, your role model could be someone you really love, but sometimes their footsteps might be the wrong ones. But follow the good footsteps and keep the bad ones. I think there's valuable insights. You you can pick from observing people, seeing how they do it, find a mentor, find someone that you trust who can keep you or help you through the hurdles. I mean, just stay curious, I think.
Yeah.
I think in a nutshell, just stay curious. Learn to learn. Love to learn. That's what I can say.
That's what you can
say. Magic always happens when you learn. Read a lot.
Yeah.
Don't confine yourself to things that you know. Just love to learn. Stay curious. Magic always happens.
Yes. Yes. Sure.
I think those are the parting words.
Yes.
And
makes sense.
Different ways of solving problems.
Yeah, definitely.
But being curious is the biggest for me.
Being curious, love it. Well, thank you so much, sir. Really appreciate your time. I think I've been writing down as you were speaking myself, and these are things that I think are insights that I can also, kind of bring into my own life. I love the fact that, when you look at money, we look at the issue of influence as well, which I think most of us, we never really think about when we're looking at money. But I've written quite a lot for myself, and I hope that my listeners as well will be encouraged by your story, your journey, and where you are as well. And may God continue to bless you. Where can people find you and where can they follow you?
My handles all across social media is at Henry Hakula.
Yeah.
Hakula, HAKULA.
Yeah.
At Henry Hakula on all platforms.
Certainly. Thank you. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, even if you Google the name, the handles just pop up.
Yes. So, yeah.
Even you say 11 dogs, that's a problem when you're in media. You also make sure that you are easily found. People can easily find you.
Makes sense. So thank you so much, sir, and may God bless you and family as well. And we'll certainly check in with you very soon.
Brilliant. Thank you very much, Pedro.
I would
want to meet you when I'm in your town.
I would certainly love that. I've got your number here, so I'll certainly be reaching out to you very soon.
Brilliant. Thank you. Have a good
day. Thank you so much. You too. Of course, that was the Elder Henry there talking to us as our shapeshifter today and just sharing some insights there. I hope that you have been blessed yourself.
Do you want to make your money make sense? Listen to Business Sense every Monday to Thursday, 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. and make sense of your money.